This is episode 2 of Studio 526M, the digitally authentic show of rants, raves, and reviews, all packed concisely for digitally minded students, faculty, or industry professionals. I am once again your host, Professor Michael Harper, recording once again from my office, Studio 526M, on the beautiful Utah Valley University campus in Orem, Utah. And on today's show, I thought segment 1 should be an in-review segment. We're going to be talking about the Beacon Blazar. This is a Salt Lake company that got started with a Kickstarter, and they've come out with not only the Blazar, but before that was the Phoenix. And, you know, this is portable stereo wireless stuff that's just really cool. And I figured I'd do this because we're always into gadgets here at the Digital Media Program. And anyway, I'll tell you the story about how I came about with this stuff, but I'm going to test them out in my office. And on segment 2, we're going to be talking about Open Device Labs. Now, some of you may have heard that in class or several of my classes, either last semester or this semester, but I'm going to bring it up because I think it's really important that our school work towards this and that developers understand what options they have to do testing. And so we're going to have that as segment 2 in our DevBox segment. But before we get there, again, our sponsor for this show is none other than the Digital Media Program here at Utah Valley University, of which I am very glad to be a part. I've been here 11 years, folks. I'm one of the old guys. I think the only one older is Dennis Lisenby. So I'm not that old. I do have gray hairs, but 11 years. But what a great program. And so they are a sponsor for this show. And for this edition of Newsstand, we have a story that's not necessarily old, but it is relevant. And a lot of students have not heard the news yet that Steve Ballmer, yes, the CEO and sometimes interesting character for the company, definitely in the past with developers. If you haven't seen that, go and look at it on YouTube. But in a major shakeup announcement many weeks ago, Microsoft has given Steve Ballmer 1 year to find a replacement, meaning that the CEO is not only given marching orders, even as the company remains profitable, but they are struggling to maintain relevance in the mobile, tablet, and phone markets, period. We've seen that. Windows Phone is making strides. I've had my own Windows phones. They're great devices, but they are really struggling against Android and iOS. And while on paper the company looks healthy, it is estimated that under Ballmer, now get this, under his leadership, over $300 billion has been lost in market capital. Not exactly a stellar number, any way you slice it or dice it. The question is, who will replace him, and what can they do to attack the mobile market? Surface, been kind of a stinker. Mobile phone, we'll have to see how they do in the next year as they've acquired Nokia Mobile Devices Division. Boy, you know, Ballmer just couldn't handle it. So who will be the next CEO, and what will they bring to the table? That is the Newsstand segment for this episode. All right, well, it's time for segment 1, and this is our first in review for Studio 526M, so why don't we go local? A local company. And the perfect solution manifested itself when I was down at Utah Valley University Bookstore, which, of course, my students visit quite often. And I happened to be down there grabbing, I guess, a 9-to-6 pin. I don't remember what it was. It was one of the FireWire cables that I needed at the time to finish up our UX design station. That's what it was. Anyway, I went down, got the cable, got it all purchased, and I happened to see Denise Porter, who is responsible for all the purchasing of the computer store items. And she was talking with two guys, and they were demonstrating some product. And so I kind of hung around. I didn't want to, like, submit myself, but I waited for the right opportunity. And they were talking about a big deal that was coming up on December 3rd for faculty and staff and students for store sales, and they were going to do a big promotion on these items. And I thought, hey, this is a pretty good deal, so let's talk. So I said, hey, how would you guys like to have me do a review on these for my new show that's going to be posted just before the event, which is this one? And they said, yeah, you bet. So they gave me two of these items, and they just so happen to be some really cool portable speakers. Now, the company is called Beacon. They're local. They actually started as a Kickstarter project, and it's been an absolute success story. They actually make these portable speaker systems, and they have others besides the one that I'm going to be demonstrating here, or at least testing out. Their newest product is called the Blazar, and they're $149 per speaker, and they're pairable, so you can actually take, obviously, the one, pair it up with your phone, and then take the other portable speaker, pair it up with the left channel, and it'll turn into the right channel, and, you know, all is well. But I thought, you know, let's test these out. Obviously, students, you guys who are in my classes and in the digital media program here at Utah Valley University, we're geeks. We like stuff like this. And so I thought, you know, let's try this out. So what I wanted to do was at least talk a little bit about, just very quickly, about the product itself and why this might be a great option for some of our students. Now, I use my students, my kids as guinea pigs for this review because I do things like that. I'm a pretty bad dad. I put technology in my house. I'll bring devices home and say, oh, try this out. And I'll observe them and see how they use it, what breaks, what doesn't work, what things are successful. I'm doing that right now with the update to the Surface just to see how well the update has helped improve the user experience. Well, I gave my daughters, just quickly, one is going to be coming here to Utah Valley University this next year, and I said, hey, try this out. And they did. And they had a great time with this device. It was easy to pair. It's quite simple. So, you know, what did I find? Well, first of all, let's kind of take a look at one of these devices. Packaging is pretty nice. The one thing I don't like is the zipper. I keep getting caught up on the zipper with this box. But, you know, I mean, if I was using that to take it around in my car so that I could be on a date out up, by Provo or up in the mountains up by Heber or something like that, getting in and out of the bag is a little bit frustrating. But as far as the technology, it's a breeze. Let's turn this thing on. Charging up's a flash, too, by the way. What's really cool about the product itself is that, you know, it comes with two cables. One is your USB cable you can plug into your machine. Or what I did is I charged them up with my receptacles in my power sockets. I have the USB receptacles, and I just plugged it right into that. They charged up in a flash, and that was great. And they also come with another cable here with the 8-inch jack so you can plug it directly into the device. But why do that when it's Bluetooth, right? So that's what I was testing. Now that it's on, I've got it all set, and there it goes. I mean, it's that simple, as Bluetooth should be. Sometimes Bluetooth devices, you know, they take a while. But, you know, these seem to go right up and connect right away. Sound-wise, let's hear. Of course, this is the recording that we did with the students downstairs with Advent Horizon from last year's event, our Bandocalypse event. It sounds pretty darn good. That's out of one speaker, guys. It's not bad at all. Now, this isn't gonna sit on my desk and take away my sound sticks. It's not as obviously bassy as my sound sticks, because I got a bass for that, and or a subwoofer. It still sounds great, and I can see putting this in my car, going out on a date, even a presentation. I can see putting this and even pairing them up and putting them around the room. It works fantastic. Now, I did have a little bit of a problem. I'll pull this down just a little bit. I did have a problem while I was using this with my laptop when I would pair the right channel with the left channel. It had some problems, so I'll need to talk to the guys there because I had some intermittent issues, and I'm not sure what it was. It was only when I was actually connecting through the laptop, my MacBook Pro. But as far as coming through with the phone, everything paired up beautifully, both stereo and singly, and just a great product. Now, the build quality of this is actually exceptional. We've got others that have metal casings. I think they don't feel as good. This one here has this really nice feel on the outside. It's got a nice rubber pad on the bottom. It's just a beautiful square. Just the top feature for doing all your menu items and volume up and down and skipping is all there as well. So if you don't want to use your phone, it's very well thought out. I really do believe it's very well thought out. So overall, for the first implementation of the Blizzard, I think this is an exceptional product. Now, the cost, $149 a pop, might be a little bit high, but then again, it's there with all the others that are out. So, you know, they're competing against each other. And believe it or not, there's three or four locally that are doing the same thing, and they're exceptional quality. So, you know, what's going on in Utah with these portable speakers? I don't know, but we're leading the way in that. As far as I'm concerned, you know, this Beacon product is really quite good, and I think it's worthy of at least a look by our students. So check it out. Now, I have the link that's here in the enhanced episode. You can go and click out and go and check out the Blizzard, and I don't know, consider it. You might very much like them. If you're a student and you want to check it out, I think they're going to leave at least one of these with me. You can come and check it out in my office and, sync it up with your phone, and maybe you'll decide to go grab one. So that's it, the Blizzard. Not bad. Termology for episode 2. Well, let's check it out here. Consult the black book again. Codec. Guys, we deal with this on a regular basis, at least weekly, if not daily. Codec, what does it mean? Well, quite simply, codec is a conjunction of two words, compression, decompression. Obviously, we all understand that when we compress, most of the time, we are actually sacrificing quality for size of the file. Not always, but generally, if we're going to be compressing way down, we're going to be losing quality. And then on the other side, we have decompression. That is on the player side. It has to be able to interpret the data. And so we have the compression side, which is applying a codec to get the size of the file down and still yet retain good quality. And then on the other side, the player has to be able to read said format and compression algorithm in order to play back the file. Doesn't matter whether it's audio or video, and the same thing applies for our images. They have to be interpretable. Now, let me just explain something that's really, really critical. There is a difference between format and the codec, and you will see and hear people talking about MPEG-4 and H.264 as if they are completely interchangeable. H.264 is a codec. MPEG-4 is a format. H.264 is what is actually doing the crunching. MPEG-4 is the actual specification. Now, there is an MP4, a .MP4 file that can come out once we've compressed, but don't confuse that with being a format and a codec. We won't get into all the different codecs within that, but the one that we most often use, is the H.264. Or the new one that will be coming out here very shortly, at least standardized and used on a regular basis, is the new H.265 codec. So recognize that we have to be very careful about how we use the terms. Nonetheless, codecs are very important for what we do. And so now you know, codec, C-O-D-E-C. And on segment 2, DevBox, we're talking about open device labs. Now, device labs are starting to pop up around the globe. And as they appear, we need to learn exactly what they are. Well, if you go and check out the link that I have called opendevicelab.com, you'll recognize that it's basically a grassroots movement by studios and development houses around the world to provide a place where other developers, competitors or friends, it doesn't matter, to come and test their products on, whether they're web designs or apps, you name it. Maybe you just want to get familiar with a particular device and an operating system, and you don't have the money to go out and buy three different operating systems and all the different devices that come with those. I mean, take Apple. We've got different iPads. We've got iPhones, Android. Oh, heaven's sakes, you've got lots of vendors, lots of versions of Android out there. And so it's really nice to have devices at your disposal. So the goal here is to take this grassroots movement and create this open device lab where people can funnel in and at no charge or for a small fee or even just giving, you know, dollars and when you visit and say, hey, you know, that was worth $50 of my time to help maintain the site and the hardware and the items that go with the open device lab. Now, what's interesting is that we've recognized early on here at the Digital Media Program at UVU that we needed to have something similar. And so about 3 years ago, we started to gather as many devices as possible where it made sense and create our own user experience design station. And last year, we were able to finalize that in our Advanced Digital Media Studio, where we have a lot of students that are coming in with senior projects or advanced projects that they're working on as juniors and seniors. And I put that as our fifth station. And it's really, you know, if you look at the picture that I've got with the enhanced episode, you can see kind of how we've got this organized. The idea behind this is that students can come into that room, the ADMS, and, you know, sign up, go to the user experience design station, and they can work on pretty much anything. If they're doing an app on, you know, iOS, or they're doing something with Android, they can develop there. They can test their apps on the different devices. If they're doing something with responsive web design, for example, they can go there and utilize the Creative Cloud services. They can use other applications like Hype, or they just want to go and use the different browsers on the desktop, or the combination of the browsers on the desktop and then use Inspect to check out all the different devices that are there. They can. Our digital magazine development efforts are also a huge part of that. As we use InDesign and Mag Plus, students can go in, develop, and test right on the iOS devices and now specifically on the Android devices to make sure that everything is running properly. And at the same time, we have other technologies that are there that allow the students to record training tutorials. Let's say they need to do a training tutorial. They can use Captivate 7. They can use other screen capture utilities like ScreenFlow, Captivate. We've got Snaps Pro 10. We've got iShowU. So there's no shortage of screen capture utilities that you can use there. And we have a great mic headset that students can then go ahead and record those training sessions and have a really nicely done project. And at the same time, it's something else that's really cool is we have the other little app for iOS and OS 10. It's called Reflect. You can then take your, let's say you have an iOS device like an iPad, and you want to showcase maybe some training with responsive web design, or you want to demonstrate your app. You can then take the screen and send it over to the Mac Mini that we have on the user experience design station for the desktop and reflect that screen of the iPad over to the desktop and then record what you're doing on the iPad. Nonetheless, there are a myriad of ways to utilize this station, and its goal is to be absolutely flexible. And it's not just OS 10. We also have Parallels on there, so you can go in and utilize Windows to test not only the web stuff, but also your app development. Let's say you're trying to do some app development for the Windows phone. We do have a Windows phone on there. I haven't even talked about the devices we have. We have a Windows phone. We have a Microsoft Surface, Surface 1. Can't get the Surface 2. Don't have all the money in the world, but we've got a Surface and a Microsoft Windows phone. We also have the older generation iPad and iPod. Those will be upgraded here in the near future as funding becomes available to get the new iPad Air, the new Mac Mini Retina, as well as an iPod Touch 5. We just bought the iPod Touch 4 and decided to wait to see where the iPod Touch was headed. We've also got the Nexus 7. We've got a Kindle HD Fire, and we also have a Samsung 10.1. Tablet. And so we also have other devices that I can plug into that. It's all secure, so I can't put any others. I've only got six slots there for security. But we also have a checkout system that you can get everything from an iBook or I mean, an iPad 1, a 2, as well as an iPad 4. We have an iPad mini. We've got plenty of older iPod touches. We have Windows phones. We have other Android-based phones. Most likely, we'll be getting a Nexus 5 for the development purposes, as it seems to be the most flexible and updatable, at least at this point. So we have a lot of devices and a lot of capacity for this user experience design station to function. Now, one of the goals that we have, and it's been on the table, but it seems to have lost a little steam as we had a transition between deans this last summer. But the goal is also to create an open device lab, at least for the students here on campus, that they can come from computer science, our IS&T folks, digital media, maybe some engineering folks, maybe even others around campus, that they can come to this open device lab on campus to really just tear apart technology, test, develop, fine-tune their products, whatever they happen to be. And at that point, we'll even open it up to game consoles and entertainment facilities, even much more than we have in the Advanced Digital Media Studio. We do have an Apple TV there that's connected to it. We also have an Xbox, so that even extends it even further in terms of some of the development and utility side. But we would like to expand it even more. And potentially, we would like to open it up to people around the valley, not only just Utah Valley, but also the Salt Lake City Valley, and allow people to come from around to test their stuff here on campus at Utah Valley University. Now, that would be really cool. There's some problems with that. We'd have to figure out timing and having people come to come on campus without... I don't know how we'll figure it out, but nonetheless, we do have something that's already going here, and it's the only one around, definitely in Utah. Apple was here. Our Apple rep, he just was like, holy cow, this is incredible. Adobe was here, and with our different contacts there, they were just like, wow, this is actually very, very cool. And now that it's going full bore, I think it's even more fundamental, and people would be really... quite impressed with the fact that we're trying to do. So my goal though is to really get our digital media students excited about using technology, getting them very familiar with the newest stuff within reason, and that they get into this idea about how they should be testing and being on the cutting edge so that they're always moving forward. There's been a lot of talk about universities, even master's programs and PhD programs around the country that don't even have anything similar to what we have here in our program, especially in the Advanced Digital Media Studio. So I hope our students recognize how blessed you really are, and that the faculty here in the digital media program, we put a lot of emphasis on trying to stay current and do a lot of extra work to get these materials in your hands, and we want you to utilize them. It is underutilized right now. I mean, even though students are using them, the different stations there and in the user experience design station, we want you to use them as often as you can so that we can see that it's benefiting you. But nonetheless, that's what we have going here. It's not an open device lab yet, but open device labs are popping up. Keep track of them. Europe is really leading the way on this. There's several here in the United States, and there are some in South America. There's even one in South Africa and a couple in Asia. So keep up on those. In the next 4 or 5 years, I expect to see dozens upon dozens upon dozens gracing the different continents and making it easier for developers to get their hands on the latest technologies and do superior testing compared to what we're doing right now. So, open device labs, pay attention to them, and you've got one right here on campus in the digital media program. Well, that does it for episode 2 of Studio 526M. Once again, the show has been sponsored by the Digital Media Program at Utah Valley University, one of my favorite places to be. And we'd like to thank Beacon for sending us over the two Blazars. Thanks, guys. It's been a real pleasure checking out that technology. And once again, I am your host, Professor Michael Harper from the Digital Media Program here at Utah Valley University. And I hope you'll tune in on the next episode of Studio 526M.